The image on the cover of your order of service today depicts a multi-level pyramid. The people on each level are having a very different experience of life based on their position in the pyramid. It's a hierarchy. The people on the bottom level are shown there on their hands and knees. There isn't even enough room for them to kneel, let alone stand. These people are impoverished, starving, dying, crushed under the weight they are shouldering of the entire pyramid above them. On the next level up, the people are shown on their feet, but still stooped as they struggle to hold the levels above them. In the next level, the figures are wearing aprons and carrying tools, indicating perhaps a working class. Above them are the professional people, the scientists, engineers, professors, and doctors. Each progressive level above those on the bottom is shown to have slightly more improved experience, though each is still supporting the people above them. Now, at the very top, it's hard to make out, but you can see there are two very fat people reclining at a table. Behind them on one side are musicians playing and servants on the other side waiting on them. In their hands are a rocket and a ship and an airplane and a truck that appear to be absent-mindedly playing with like toys. Set before them on the table is a city, also toy-sized, as if to be played with and manipulated like a dollhouse. This is a very provocative image, and one that has stayed very present for me since Tracy, our office administrator, first offered it for today's cover art. The piece was created to illustrate the stark inequity of global wealth, and I thought it would be a good image for us to look at together. That there is inequality is not new information for any of us. We are aware of the extreme poverty that exists on the grand scale in the developing nations of our world, just as we are aware of extreme poverty that exists in virtually every town and city in our own nation. As I began to write this sermon, I wondered, how do we, as a people of faith, while also a people of relative wealth, talk about power and privilege? How do we understand our place in the pyramid? And how does it feel to consider that our lifestyle is supported by those below us in the hierarchy? Our society is confused, some would even say willfully so, on the topic of power and privilege. The messages that each of us have received from the time we were very young, messages from our parents and teachers, from the billboards and movies and television shows, magazine ads and school textbooks, tell us that material success is the goal of life. Even if you were raised by bohemian beat poets in the village or hippies on a commune in the middle of nowhere, you did not escape the pervasive message that money makes the world go around, and that in order to be happy, you will need money so that you can buy stuff. The more money you have, the better off you'll be. Money, we come to understand, is power. We also learn early that some people are extremely wealthy and that they are to be admired. Their lifestyle is to be envied. We are taught that people become wealthy because of a combination of hard work, smart business deals, and sheer luck. The American dream tells us that anyone can build a fortune if they just work hard enough. And we learned the stories in school of how poor, tired European immigrants found ways to pull themselves up by their very bootstraps and became successful businessmen. Anyone can do it if they but apply themselves in this great melting pot of a country. This is the mythology that we have inherited. But we cannot turn away from the fact that this country was essentially stolen from the native people who lived here. The arrival of Europeans wiped out over 90% of the native population through the spread of disease and war. Then they decimated what was left of native cultures in an attempt to, quote, civilize or Christianize them. And we cannot, with any integrity, continue to deny the fact that much of American wealth was created on the bent and broken backs of African slaves. And what does our mythology say about those who fail? Who better to represent the failure of this dream than those who find themselves homeless? We tell ourselves that they are probably mentally ill or addicted or had a bad home life growing up. We think of it generally as a sad situation, and we may bemoan the dismantling of the subsidized mental health system in the 1980s. Sometimes when we have one handy, we give a dollar to the man by the freeway exit, and we help to create shelters and donate jackets and collect food so they don't starve or freeze to death. We wring our hands and wonder to one another about what can really be done. Mary Elizabeth Hobgood, in her book, Dismantling Privilege and Ethics of Accountability, writes, "We have been socialized to see privilege as a just reward for superior talent and effort, and disadvantage as a result of individual inadequacies. Consequently, we are not tutored in uncovering the ways society reproduces unshared power arrangements that are often at the root of these privileges and disadvantages. Put more simply, we think people deserve to be wherever it is that they find themselves in the class hierarchy, and we, as a people of privilege, have little awareness of the systems that create and maintain the wealth of the few at the top. To be oblivious to the hierarchy is itself a privilege. If you look at those on the bottom of the pyramid in the image, it's clear that they are very aware of those above them and the weight of the burden that they carry. Those closer to the top can go through their days hardly noticing all that supports them." It was only in the last few years that I learned about redlining. Throughout most of the 20th century, a red line was drawn on a map delineating neighborhoods where banks would not invest. The system was created ostensibly to help banks to make good real estate investments, but in practice, it had the effect of keeping African Americans out of certain neighborhoods for fear that they would bring down the home values of their would-be white neighbors. This devious system intentionally inhibited middle-class Black Americans from amassing the same wealth that their white counterparts were able to pass on to their own children. It no longer surprises me that this significant social phenomenon is not taught in schools. Members of the dominant culture also determine what makes it into a textbook and what is quietly laid aside. Anti-racist activist and writer Tim Wise notes that the irony of American history is the tendency of good white Americans to presume racial innocence. Ignorance of how we are shaped racially is the first sign of privilege. In other words, it is a privilege to ignore the consequences of race in America. The pyramid image, with many people crushed by the weight of the privileged few, is what the world looks like when the ego is given free rein. The ego, remember, is the part of ourselves that thinks that we are each separate, independent, isolated units, living in a world of finite objects. It is the part of us that freaks out when it thinks there isn't enough to go around. We are responding to the frantic cries of the ego when we stomp all over one another in a mad rush to get as much as we can of the material world before there isn't enough left for me and mine. It is the root of competition. We see this in the marketplace, on the freeways, on the playing field, and in the invasion and occupation of resource-rich nations around the globe. This is the world we are all living in, and it is not a world of peace and joy. There is another way. Spiritually awake people have been pointing to it since the very beginning. The Buddha taught the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path toward ending suffering and reaching enlightenment, the crux of which is to awaken to the constant demands of the ego in order to stop being ruled by it. Jesus told people to find peace, they had to stop worrying so much about making a living and following all the societal rules, and instead to forgive and to love one another, and the God of love would take care of all of the rest. Native wisdom tells us to listen carefully to the natural world and learn to be in harmony with it. The Persian poets wrote love songs and poetry about drunkenly dancing with God in the street, entreating us to treat everyone we meet as if they are the embodiment of the divine. In the spiritual realm, ego, power, and privilege are turned upside down. To have privilege is to find yourself in a position of superiority and advantage to the vast majority of your fellow man. How can that possibly be spiritually healthy? To see the world through the eyes of love is to see the divine spark reflected back to us in the eyes of each and every person in the world. When you see everyone in this way, it is impossible to tolerate, much less perpetrate, suffering in anyone. You want for everyone only peace and joy. Seeing the world this way requires us to get honest about our place in the pyramid, how we benefit, and how we participate in maintaining the status quo. To have spiritual integrity, we have to awaken to the fact that the system is rigged. The playing field is not level, and privilege is not earned. Those with the most power control the message and the money. The house always wins. Our great spiritual liability is our belief in the lie that we've been told that we deserve our privilege or our poverty. In truth, no one deserves to be wherever it is that they land in that pyramid. Our spiritual work is to disentangle our sense of worth and entitlement from our privilege. We have to open our eyes and understand that our wealth does not mean anything about who we are. Spiritual teacher Alan Cohen writes, "You can distinguish between the gifts of the world and the gifts of God by one simple test. When you give a gift of the world, you have less and someone else has more. When you give a gift of God, both the giver and the receiver gain. The gifts of the world are physical commodities. The gifts of God are energetic experiences. When you give love, kindness, patience, forgiveness, you gain the experience of the gift you are giving in the moment you give it. So you are as blessed as the receiver." People in recovery and Alcoholics Anonymous are taught that they have been putting alcohol where God should be, at the center of their life. You don't have to have a substance abuse problem to be spiritually imbalanced. It just means you are investing things with an importance that they do not have. The ego, driven by fear, thinks it can lead you to peace and happiness. It tells you that God is on your side. But the nature of the ego is that it is never satisfied, at least not for long. Only your relationship with your God, whatever that means for you, only when that relationship comes first will you find true peace. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Man must evolve for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. The foundation of such a method is love." Once we get our heart on straight, open our eyes to what truly matters, then creating a just and peaceful world will necessarily follow. Miracles happen, and great healing is possible. The pyramid will eventually crumble, beginning in our own hearts and minds. I leave you with one last quote from Tim Wise. He says, "What whites have rarely had to think about, because being the dominant group, we are so used to having our will done, with a little bit of effort at least, is that maybe the point is not victory. However much we all wish to see justice attained and injustice routed, maybe our redemption comes from the struggle itself. Maybe it is in the effort the striving for equality and freedom, that we become human. May it be so. Amen.